with people.
Share the experience.
Life in China.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Life in China on China Radio International. I'm Chen Hao.
Hi, I'm Vanessa, and today we'll be looking at the kind of pressures the country's transportation system is faced with as more and more people get a taste for travel as the traditional Chinese Spring Festival draws near. We'll also be joined by Ben Gregory, a British teacher working in Beijing, who will be talking about his experiences of living and teaching in China.
Plus, we'll be visiting Xuzhou again this week to find out why title deeds are such valuable finds. So stay with us and don't go away.
Changhao, you're a bit of an oddity, aren't you? Everybody I know is getting ready to go home for the Spring Festival celebrations, but you're planning on staying here, so why is that?
Well, yes, it's true. Spring Festival is the most important traditional holiday of the year, and it's a time when everyone returns to the family. So it is unusual for me to stay behind to work, but you know, somebody has to do it, and actually it's an exception. Normally, I would just go home.
Well, this year the festival falls on February the 1st, the first day of the month of the Lunar New Year.
Yes.
The holiday is just a week away and the country already seems to be in holiday mode. Shops, restaurants, travel agencies are all doing their best to attract customers and holiday makers.
You know, Spring Festival means a lot for people in China because it's a family reunion, which is the most important part. On the eve of the Lunar New Year, members of the family gather together for a traditional reunion dinner.
So if you are studying or working far away from home, you'll probably have already booked your tickets to go back.
Exactly. And you can bet it's going to be really crowded again at all of the train stations and airports around the country this Spring Festival. In fact, this year, it's predicted there will be a sharp increase in the number of passengers traveling, so railways and coach stations will be even more packed than usual. Wang Ho is a carpenter working in Hebei province, and he told us about the difficulties he's had in getting hold of a ticket.
There are too many people traveling by rail this year. I was told that tickets to my home province of Henan were all sold out 4 days ago. Last year, the situation was much better. I bought my ticket at the station the day I left.
Chen Shen from Zhejiang province in East China is a waiter at a Beijing restaurant. He's still trying to get a train ticket home.
I came to Beijing because I can earn more money here, but I always go back home for the traditional family reunion at Spring Festival. I haven't managed to get my ticket yet, but I'll keep trying. And if it really is impossible to go by train, then I'll have to go by coach.
In order to reduce the incredible queues for train tickets, railway stations in Beijing have begun to sell them several days in advance of the departure date.
That's a good idea.
That is a good idea. Well, here is Cai Fengxiang, the manager of Beijing's Western Railway Station, to tell us more about their measures to make travel more convenient for passengers.
We've done our best to increase the number of ticket outlets so that customers don't have to come to the station. Just to give you an idea of the scale of the crowds, during the off-peak season, we have 30 ticket offices. Now we've got 108 ticket offices open. We've also had automatic ticket machines installed at the station.
You know, Vanessa, during Spring Festival, about 2.5 million people will travel from the Beijing Western Railway Station. That's 150,000 more people than last year. Cai Fengxiang says more passenger trains will be added to the service to cope with the numbers.
During
the Spring Festival period, we'll be using at least 35 extra trains. That means more than 100 trains will leave for different parts of the country every day. In addition, we've set up temporary waiting halls to better control the flow of passengers in and out of the station.
Well, it means that passengers won't have to wait around for their trains in the biting cold, so you can take some comfort if you are travelling from the Western Railway Station here in Beijing. But in the effort to make travel more convenient, China's rail services still face a huge challenge because of the sudden increase in the number of travellers.
Yes, that's right. On the 17th of January, the official start of the Spring Festival travel season, more than 3 million passengers travelled by rail on one single day. Between January 17th and February 25th, it's estimated that more than 130 million passengers will use the country's rail services, and more than 300 additional railway lines will be used during the peak period. And as we heard, Beijing's Western Railway Station has opened additional ticket offices around the city. Actually, similar measures are being taken around the whole country. For example, Southwest China's Chongqing Railway Station has increased their number of ticket offices to 24, and East China's Hefei Railway Station now has 16 ticket offices operating. And during the peak season, all these offices will be open around the clock to meet increased demand.
Rural laborers and students make up the biggest number of travelers this holiday. Dong Lei is a student at the North China University of Technology. He also hasn't managed to get a train ticket to go back to his home in East China's Anhui province.
My parents are hoping that I will come home this holiday. In previous years, I've stayed in Beijing during the Spring Festival to earn some extra money. This year is slightly different, because I'm doing my postgraduate finals now, and after this, I would really like to spend some time with my family. I just hope I can manage to get a student ticket before Lunar New Year's Eve.
While it can be an anxious time for those who want to go home and are still struggling for tickets, those who have already booked their seats can relax and breathe a sigh of relief. Tang Lihua from Guangxi Zhuang Autonomous Region works for a food company in Beijing.
I've already got my train ticket. At my workplace, we are lucky because our manager helped to book them in advance. I prefer to celebrate Spring Festival at home because the atmosphere is more celebratory. In the big cities, the holiday feels no different to the rest of the year.
During Spring Festival, ticket prices will go up by between 15% to 20% to cover the increased costs of running the extra railway lines. Han Guibing from Shandong Province works as a security guard here in Beijing and commented on the rise in ticket prices.
Increases in price have not affected my decision whether to go home. It's a journey I would make whatever the cost. It's inevitable that prices go up during peak season when so many people are traveling. And if some of that extra money goes toward making travel more convenient, then I'm prepared to pay. The most important thing is that I can get home.
Well, you know, Vanessa, since train tickets are selling out so fast this year, plane tickets are expensive, so many are deciding to go home by coach. It's becoming a popular alternative, especially since the building of better expressway links around the country and the improvement of luxury coach services.
The Lianhuachi station in Beijing Southwest is one of the busiest long-distance coach stations in the city. Station manager Chen Bao Tsung says they've made full preparations for the coming rush of passengers this holiday.
Our station operates 76 long-distance coach routes, which extend the length and breadth of the country. The longest route is 1,250 kilometers down to Shashi in South China's Hubei province. Spring Festival is the busiest time for us. All our staff have had to cancel their own holiday during the Spring Festival season. On average, 85 coaches will be leaving the station to different destinations every day.
Li Yuhai from East China's Shandong province works for a construction company in Beijing. He went to the Lianhuachi coach station to try his luck, and now let's hear what he has to say.
I was told it was difficult to get train tickets now. That's why I've come here to see if I can get a coach ticket. I normally take the train home because it's fast and safe. But going by coach is also an option. The expressway links with my hometown are very good, so the journey would be quite fast and the coach is air-conditioned. Another advantage is that the ticket is cheaper than the train, so it's worth trying.
And there are other advantages to traveling by coach. Chen Xundong is a long-distance coach driver at the Lianhuachi station.
The good thing about going by coach is that our routes cover the smaller towns that the trains don't stop at. If passengers need to get to places that are difficult to reach, we can take them straight there. Many of our customers are rural farmers who work in cities. A lot of students also use the service. And recently, we've been carrying more tourists.
Besides trains and the long-distance coach services, more people are also taking to the air. The Civil Aviation Administration of China estimates that around 9 million passengers will use the country's airlines during Spring Festival, a 4% increase over the same period last year. The number of passengers flying from Hong Kong, Macau and Taiwan to the mainland is also expected to see a large increase this year.
Join us every Friday on China Radio International. You can email us at enlife@cri.com.cn or write to us by post at English Service, China Radio International, Beijing, China, 10040.
Life in China.
Life in China.
Life in China, for a real picture of today's China. Welcome back. You're listening to Life in China on China Radio International, and now we're joined by our guest this week, Ben Gregory, who's a teacher from Britain.
Hi, my name is Ben Gregory. I'm an English teacher in Beijing. I've been here for 2 years now. When I first came to China in 2000, I didn't have any idea what to expect at all, really. I had really no idea about anything Chinese. I'd heard of Shanghai and Beijing, probably seen pictures of the Great Wall of China, and I heard of Chairman Mao and knew a bit about him. I knew there'd been a revolution here this century. But that was really all I knew, and I think that's just about all quite a lot of people know in the West, unfortunately, although that probably is changing now. I really did think there'd be loads and loads and loads of bicycles everywhere, for one thing, and I thought Beijing would look very much as it did about 20 or 30 years ago, with more hutongs, smaller buildings. I was very surprised, coming from the airport, to see enormous advertising hoardings, you know, and these skyscrapers emerging in the distance. Really, everything that I saw here surprised me, and of course I was jet-lagged, I remember, so I couldn't sleep at all the first night, and I had to go and teach that morning. Since I wasn't sleeping, I sort of got out of bed at about 6 o'clock, and I thought, 6 o'clock, I'll go for a jog around, you know, have some exercise, get my energy up, get ready for teaching this morning. And if you get up at 6 o'clock in England, there's nobody there, right? The street is basically empty. There'll just be a couple of birds, you know, fighting over a worm. That's about it. But here, I got up at 6 o'clock, and I thought my watch must be wrong because everybody was up, and I was having to, you know, excuse me, trying to jog here. And that was strange. And then when I had to walk to school, that's when I really began to think I was seeing things, because I was walking the short distance to school from my flat. It's only about a 2-minute walk, actually, but as soon as I turned the first corner, I saw this guy coming down the street, walking backwards. Yeah, okay, and sort of tried not to think about it. And then I continued to walk up the street, and there was people sort of doing Tai Chi, you know, which I'd never seen before, holding onto railings and going backwards and forwards and waving their arms around. And then I saw this guy swinging a birdcage around. It was just nothing I'd ever seen or heard about. So when I got to school, I was saying to people, what's going on? Why are all these people walking around backwards and doing these strange exercises? And people said, just calm down, it's okay, it's just people doing their exercises. They believe that walking backwards is good for you. People like to take the birds out for a walk in the fresh air. It's okay. But I thought it was very, very strange. Anyway, my job here is teaching, which is a very easy job to do in China because these students here are absolutely wonderful. I've really really enjoyed. In fact, I think that's the thing I've enjoyed most about being in China is the actual work with my students, because all of them, from young children to adults, business people, everybody that I've taught, just about everybody, has been a pleasure to teach. I find the students here so eager to learn about my culture, where I come from, what I think about things. You know, they're really inquisitive and they work hard, and I could never now go home and teach in England. In fact, just the thought of teaching European students even, which I did briefly last year, is also very, very difficult after working with the students here. When I ask my students what they think Britain is like in their mind, those who haven't been there, one thing which I often hear is that they think there are lots of gentlemen in Britain, and that people are very civilized there. And actually, I think that really applies to China, what I've seen of China. Here, I've never had a situation where somebody has been unpleasant to me, ever, in 2 years, you know? There's some things which, as a foreigner, you find unusual, and for that reason, they can annoy you, because it's something you're not used to. Another thing about Beijing, it's so safe here. You know, if I walk around any large British city at night, there are places that I can't go, because there's quite a good chance something bad could happen to me. And I've never felt that in Beijing, although I am warned by Chinese people sometimes that there are some things to watch out for here. To me, it seems so safe from crime, so safe from danger. I never feel as if I'm under threat walking around in the streets, and that is such a nice sensation to somebody coming from the West. Also is something which I hope doesn't change here, you know, as things change, because it's so nice to live in somewhere where you feel really safe. I personally much prefer living in Beijing to living in Britain now. Of course, I miss my friends and family, and I miss certain things about home. But actually, I'd be quite happy to live in Beijing for a long, long time. The only thing I miss is greenery and countryside. But in general, you know, I think it's a great place. It's a really pleasant, laid-back place to live, which for a capital city has retained a lot of its old-fashioned charm, whilst at the same time modernizing and being a place where you can get things and do things which, as a foreigner, are important. You know, I can go to concerts, I can really do anything here, I can do it at home. But it's still somewhere which feels like an interesting, colourful, foreign place. You know, it still feels like somewhere different, which lots of international cities don't. So I really hope that the Beijing can remain old-fashioned in some ways whilst modernising. And I hope I can stay here for some time to come.
My name is Daniel Scharf. I'm from Nebraska in the United States. The first impression that I
came to China the first time in 1936 as an exchange student from Oregon State.
Hi, I'm Liu Zuijing. Unlike some of my peers, I'm the only child in my family. I think because of this, I received more love.
My name is Karen Patterson, and I'm from Canada. I met Wu Yuren at an art exhibition.
Hi, dear audience. I'm Zhang Jingxin. My family has been living a very happy life in the recent years.
When I came to China in 1987, my goodness, how things have changed in a few years.
How would you like to join us worldwide with your interesting stories about China? All you have to do is pick up the phone and call 8610-688-9160 or send us an email, enlife@cri.com.cn. We're listening.
Welcome back, and now it's time to hear about Yang Jianming from Xuzhou in East China's Jiangsu province. In 1996, he began the rather unusual hobby of collecting title deeds. Up till now, he's amassed over 1,000 documents. Now, we'll tell you his story and why he decided to start his collection. Here's Shen Ting with the story.
It used to be said that a man's wealth was his land. And today, it's the case in most parts of the world that a person's most valuable financial asset is usually his property. During China's feudal system, which spanned several thousands of years, most of the farming land was in hands of the landlords and bureaucrats. only a small portion of the land was owned by Yumen. In times of natural disaster, illness, wars and social unrest, small landowners and Yumen had little choice but to sell their lands to survive. When the ownership of land exchanged hands, the title deeds were passed on to the new owner. However, over time, many of these have disappeared in the flux of history, and today it is a rarity to come across such papers. Born in Xuzhou, Yang Jianming is now 60 years old. When he was young, he was very keen on collecting Chinese calligraphy and seals, but it was his interest in these that led to his fascination with title deeds.
In 1996, I came to Beijing on business. Just by chance, I stumbled upon some old title deeds in an antique store. As I read them, I discovered how fascinating they were. The Chinese writing and the seals attracted me at first. But in fact, I realized the deeds in themselves were very valuable as historical documents. So I decided it was worth starting a collection. From then on, I began to search for more.
Because title deeds went out of use after the founding of New China in 1949, it's rare to find them anywhere now. Those still in possession of deeds are reluctant to sell them because they've been handed down from their ancestors. So you can imagine what kind of detective work went into finding all of those now in Yang Jianming's possession. Among the 1,000, he has over 700 date back to the Qing Dynasty and over 300 from the period between 1912 and 1949. Title deeds hold the key to why a particular piece of land was sold. The price of the property provides an insight into the economic situation at the time. They also reveal who owned the land, what the tax system was like, and even details about the class and social conflicts of that period of history. Jiang Xing, a professor of history at Xuzhou Normal University, commented on their value.
Title deeds have a historic value because they reveal a lot about the social and economic practices of the time they were used. They are invaluable primary sources for the study of ownership of production and tracing the movement of land into the hands of the peasant class. This form of certification was recognized by the government of the time and is considered one of the official legal conventions. They are therefore valuable materials, which can help us understand the political, judicial, and governmental systems of the past.
Small as the title deeds are, they can reflect the bigger picture of society. Li Yongle, also a teacher from the history department at Xuzhou Normal University, specializes in the study of land use.
The significance of studying title deeds, as well as the literature of the day, is that they tell us about society and the class structure. In the past, recorded history dealt mainly with facts and figures taken from the accounts of the ruling classes. But I think we should approach history in a more realistic way. It's also important to know how ordinary people lived. Title deeds show us how people from the lower classes transacted business and what their relationships were with the government. You can't get a full picture of the past if you don't know how the majority of the population lived.
Although Yang Jianming has collected more than 1,000 title deeds, he feels his collection is far from being complete. At a recent exhibition of his title deeds from the Qing Dynasty, Yang had this to say.
My collection only contains materials that I've gathered from 5 provinces. I plan to continue my search for title deeds in other parts of the country. I've also decided to repair and professionally preserve the ones I already have. This exhibition is of title deeds from the Qing Dynasty. Later, I want to put together an exhibition from the period 1912 to 1949. I'd also like to bring the exhibition to other parts of the country so more people can share in the fascination.
And we look forward to seeing some of those title deeds in the near future.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Life in China on China Radio International. If you have any comments or suggestions about this program, don't hesitate to tell us.
You can email us at enlife@cri.com.cn or you can write us a letter. Simply address it to English Service, China Radio International, Beijing, 10040, China.
And finally, special thanks to our producer Chun Yong and my partner Vanessa. I'm Chen Hao, saying thank you very much for listening and see you next Friday.